Welcome home. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, celebrating 27 years this weekend, and we're looking forward to getting out. I'm not going to have 27 crab cakes. I've already done that. We're going to do our 27 favorite foods throughout the month of August to celebrate our 27th anniversary and also get ready for those buffalo wings we're going to be having on September 7th. The Orioles are amidst trading deadline activities. Lucas is out in Owings Mills where they're putting pads on. I will be giving away scratch-offs in the Maryland Lottery. The Lucky Sevens, the Pressure Lux, I have them both. It will begin next Thursday. We'll be at Beaumont and Catonsville. Beginning a month of celebration around here. My logo is going to change to the 27th logo, and I'm going to be eating fun things all month long while the Ravens play fake football and try to remain healthy and try to remain a Super Bowl favorite, if not a contender. Luke Jones is here. He will be there as they buckle up the chin straps and go past thud, I guess. I mean, they're at least going to put jerseys on and shoulder pads. Luke, this is the most wonderful time of the year. It's July in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, this is when training camp actually starts. First week, look, you can check out my observations at BaltimorePositive.com, and I offered some, and there were some good things. And
What's flag football the first couple days, right?
I mean,
Like, sort of.
it's really a continuation of OTAs. I mean, it's really what it is. I mean, they're still in helmets and shells. You know, they're still in shorts. I mean, there's a little bit more contact in terms of just hand fighting between the offensive line and defensive line, but when the pads come on, no, they're not tackling to the ground. Maybe the young guys, they'll do a little bit of that at the very end of practice, but they're hitting. As Cam Cameron famously said years and years ago, things change a little bit when you introduce the threat of contact, right? Knowing throughout the spring when guys are in shorts and there's no pads and you have young wide receivers making plays over the middle, even though going over the middle isn't what it used to be when Ray Lewis was roaming the field and the rules were way different then. But it's different. It's just different. I mean, John Harbaugh even was asked about it. I think it was what Friday, I guess it was. And he flat out said, it's exciting. And obviously, you have guys that they've been out there doing a lot of football where they can't really play football. I mean, that's coming directly from the head coach. So, yeah, business picks up this week. I mean, they're not going to go nuts. We've already talked about it. We're a long ways away from even the beginning of Joe Flacco's career, where you still had two-a-days in Westminster. So you're not going to see that. I mean, these guys, they'll go a day or two with pads on, then they go shells and shorts the next day. Might go shells and shorts 2 days, then the pads come back on. So yeah, it's still a ramp up. You're not going to go full go here, but this is where, okay, especially young guys, newcomers, guys that you're trying to really get a read on. I mean, I've mentioned in passing, and this is just one example. Aeneas Peebles, the sixth round defensive lineman that they drafted, they really like this kid. He's undersized though. That's why he was a sixth round pick. So he has flashed some pass rushing ability and some moves, but it's a little different doing that in a setting where the pads aren't on and you're not going full contact compared to now. And it's like, okay, let's see how it looks when you are going not fully blown live tackling to the ground, but at least going thud. And that's where you want to find out. You want to find out about your young offensive lineman. You want to find out about your guys in the secondary. You want to find out about everyone, right? I mean, again, other than Lamar, because the quarterback's wearing the, even though they don't wear red jerseys, but the red non-contact jersey you think of when you think of quarterbacks. But other than Lamar, everyone else now is subject to contact. So it does change the dynamic a little bit. And I would say that that also goes for guys who maybe haven't stood out to this point in time. I can think back to, I'll give you an example right off the top of my head. Patrick Owusu, who was an undrafted rookie linebacker. They got to the point where it was, I believe, the second week of training camp. They put the pads on, or whenever they put the pads on, third day, fourth day, whatever it was. And he absolutely, I think it was Kyle Juszczyk, I think. I could be mixing up my years a little bit. He absolutely walloped whoever it was in a special teams drill. And that put Patrick Owusu on the radar. I don't think I had even mentioned his name or written his name once. And he ended up making the team and ended up having a nice little 3-4 year run with the Ravens then. So there's an example of a guy who didn't necessarily get to make his mark in the spring, or the first few days of camp when you don't have the pads on, and then suddenly someone pops, you know, someone flashes. So it goes both ways. We talk about the spring all-star types who do really well when they're in shorts and then the pads go on and they kind of wilt. But it also goes the other way, where you have some guys who maybe the physicality is the best part, best element of their game, or the most underrated part of their game, and then suddenly they can showcase that a little more, and you say, hey, where did this guy come from? So there are always some surprises in that way as well. So I think you can tell, you know, this is my 17th training camp. Very little the first week to really of any real note. I mean, Tyler Loop made a 63-yard field goal in practice. Great, you know, good. That was a fun headline. Got a high five from the head coach, but it's practice, right? Everything that happens the first few days, it's not terribly different than the spring. But now, pads get come on. It's hot. You're going to be going for 2, 2.5 hours now compared to hour and a half, you know, the first couple practices where they're ramping up. So business picks up now, and you start to see what exactly is real, you know, who can answer the challenge and who kind of comes out of the woodwork, so to speak, that you haven't necessarily talked about. And then you say, hey, where did that guy come from? I need to start paying attention to him. And inevitably there's a guy or two like that as well when the pads come on.
We talk so much about players and so much about DaCosta in the offseason and so much about draft hopes and not necessarily free agents around here, maybe losing one or two or picking one or two up, or the Patrick McCarrys that have left the building, or Patrick Queen that left last year, or you know, these players that come and go. The coordinators are something we don't talk about much in the offseason. We don't mention their names. We don't mention scheme. We don't mention much of that. Then we get into this part of it, and it really is all about play calling, all about what wrinkles are they, you know, where's DeAndre Hopkins fit in this thing? How can they drive Zay Flowers better? Where are they really with the tight ends and use of the tight ends? How much do they really want Derrick Henry to carry the ball early in the year in his 33rd, 34th year on earth, whatever it is at this point for him? So, a lot of that, I think, doesn't get baked out at all in these preseason games for sure, or what they really want to do against Buffalo. But you do see them calling plays, moving plays along in scripts through the next 5 weeks of practice as they get ready for all of this to say, what are our good plays? What's Lamar comfortable in? How does Hopkins really fit in this offense on second down, third down? Base package versus whatever the defense is. There's no such thing as a base package, but down and distance situationally, what Zach Orr wants to do, what Chuck Pagano sees, right? And you know, whether it was Dean Pease last year or not, he's gone, right? Pagano's back or around now, right? So has taken that role. So seeing the pieces all run around out there is sort of the inspiration for, this is how we're going to play Buffalo on the 7th of September. This is what we do well. And I don't know if they know what they do well, because I don't even know what they know what their offensive line is right now or what it can be. I would think with Linderbaum and Rosengarten and Stanley aside, because that's its own animal, we talk about that a lot. Emerging players, players that are getting better, not necessarily where Roquan Smith is or Marlon Humphrey to say, we're not expecting them to emerge. We're expecting them to survive, thrive, be healthy enough for 30-something-year-old football players. But the emergence of certain players, I mean, when Kyle Hamilton got shot out of a gun 2, 3 years ago, right? Like, you didn't expect that, but it certainly made an impact. And I want to see who these impact players are, because this team is so loaded with veteran players and MVP candidates and guys who got screwed out of the MVP and the running back who's going to the Hall of Fame. They check all the boxes in the way that the 01 team in retrospect, when you look back and say, well, they had Rod Woodson, they had Shannon Sharpe, they had some great football play to Dilfer aside. They had some great players. Jamal in his prime, you know what I mean? Just great football players. This team has that, certainly with Lamar, but I also think the coaching part of this and dreaming and scheming the offensive coordinators and all the work they've done the last 6 months. I mean, Pagano's been running around here for 4 months, getting ready to say, here's how we're going to deploy Kyle Hamilton once this kid Starks can play safety.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing I'll point out, since you mentioned the coordinators, you have all three of your coordinators returning, right? I mean, at this time last year, you were trying to get acclimated, not just with Zach Orr, but keep in mind the other brain drain that they experienced with some of their other assistants, Anthony Weaver, right? I mean, guys that went and took coordinator jobs elsewhere. So there was a lot of that going on. And let's face it, we focused a lot on two elements, and you already mentioned one, Dean Pease, which, what I've gathered, I think we probably overstate the role that Dean Pease had, from what I've gathered talking to people within the organization, but certainly he helped. And that was something he came in at a time of crisis, right? I mean, at a time where their secondary and their pass defense was kind of a disaster early, the first half of the season. So you had that element. And we also talked a lot about the Marcus Williams benching and what that meant for Kyle Hamilton, what that meant for Ardarius Washington. So, but this year, fast forward to summer of 2025, as we're into the last few days of July, into early August, still very much in your install mode in terms of what you're doing offensively, defensively, all of that. And to your point, there is a lot of, I don't know if experimenting is the right term all the time, but you are trying to flesh out the stuff that maybe you don't do quite as well, and you're trying to really identify everything that you do at a really high level, because that's what you want to do, right? I mean, you don't want to overthink this. The idea of being an offense or a defense isn't necessarily to be the most complicated outfit that you can imagine, because that sounds great if you can do all those things really well, but you can be really complicated, and if your guys don't really know what they're doing with certain plays that you call or certain packages that you call, it doesn't make any sense.
Well,
So,
Rex Ryan needed 11 really smart guys out there
yeah.
because one F up and the ball went over everybody's head.
Yeah. Well, and again, on the defensive side of the football, we saw this last year. And by the way, we didn't talk about this a ton. We talked a lot about Pagano, but they replaced their inside linebackers coach, who was in his first year last year. They replaced two of their secondary coaches with Chuck Pagano coming in, right?
Well, this just speaks to Marcus Williams being pissed off, and whatever Trenton Simpson is, and whatever Patrick Queen was, and whatever the middle of the field looked like. You're only as smart as your most confused football player in an 11-man set. Whoever
And
the most confusing. Remember Billick in the video 25. Let's pick on the little guy over there. Whatever it is,
sure.
that guy doesn't know what he's doing. Let's confuse that guy with our tight end, and if it's Travis Kelce, you lose.
Yeah. So I think in hindsight, when you kind of look at how it played out, the first year assistants that they had coaching some of those positions, mainly secondary and linebacker, and in fairness, Doug Mallory was in his first year as a defensive backs coach, but Chris Hewitt had been in there coaching their secondary for years and years and years. But regardless, it didn't work. It was made very much problematic. And I think, having just kind of sniffed around and talked to some people, just kind of reflecting on last year, if anything, I think the perception was much more that maybe Zach Orr was too trusting of some of his assistants and didn't take full command of, hey, make sure th this needs to be better. This needs to be better. This needs to be better. More so than Zach Orr was in over his head or anything like that, right? And I think with the way that things played out down the stretch and the changes that they made, I think that reflected very well on Zach Orr. So now he's in year two, right? He's more comfortable. He's got Chuck Pagano on the back end as secondary coach. Obviously, another set of very experienced eyes and experienced voice that should hopefully clean up any of the lingering issues they had from last year. They feel that they've upgraded in their secondary, of course, with Jaire Alexander being added at the end of minicamp. Obviously, health is a question with him and Awuzie, but these are accomplished. In the case of Alexander, a two-time Pro Bowl cornerback. In the case of Awuzie, when the Bengals were kind of at their best and making their Super Bowl run a few years ago, Awuzie was a really nice player for them. In fact, some of the downfall of their defense, you could probably point to his knee injury and his lack of availability is one of the big things that hurt them. Go back 3, 4 years ago. So they have those guys in the mix now. But you mentioned this time of year, whether you're talking about coaching, whether you're talking about testing things out from scheme, you mentioned all the established players that they have. And of course, in their secondary, and I'm sticking with the secondary right now because I think it's the highest profile change that we've seen, even going back to last November. But you have Hamilton. He's one of the very best defensive players in football, not just best safety, but best defensive players in the league. You have Marlon Humphrey, who's a Pro Bowl corner, four-time Pro Bowl corner. You have Alexander added to the mix now. But two guys that I'm really intrigued to see. Nate Wiggins, who I thought had a really nice first week and is entering his second year, and is someone they were over the moon to get at the end of the first round last year. Played a lot last year, had his ups and downs, but I think was trending in a good direction at the end of
They
last
see him in
season.
a Jimmy Smith sort of,
Yeah,
I mean,
they
right?
look on him being an outside corner for the next, you hope the next 5, 6, 7 years, a second contract. If he's that good, then you hope he can be that guy. Because Marlon Humphrey, even though Marlon's not, that old, but you also know Marlon Humphrey's probably not going to be a top shelf corner for the next 5 years. You might have a couple more years of that, and then you're going to be deciding, where do we go here? Do we let him go and we pay Nate Wiggins? We're going to have to pay Hamilton, right? It's always a shell game when it gets to some of these veterans at a certain point compared to your emerging young players that you think are going to be young stars for you. I'm not calling Wiggins a star yet, but you're hoping he has a chance to be that guy in the next couple of years. So there's him, and then the other guy. And I talked about this in the spring, and this kind of goes back to my point about, okay, the pads are coming back on. You want to see it translate. But Malachi Starks is really impressive, man. I mean, he really is. And he's starting to make more play. He was starting to make more plays on the ball this past week compared to how he looked in OTAs. He didn't look bad in OTAs, let me be clear about that. But you can always tell when you have a young player that maybe he's not flashing quite as much. But the good thing was he was always in, seemed to be in the right spot. You didn't hear coaches constantly say, "Malachi, that's not what you want to be doing there. Malachi, your alignment was off there." He seems to be in the right spot. And now, over these first few days at camp, you're seeing a progression even from back at what he looked in OTAs. Let me be clear. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Ed Reed. I'm not going to say he's going to be the next Kyle Hamilton, but I think they really like what they see. And I think a big part of that, I don't know if you've had a chance to hear him speak at the podium or go back and hear some of his interviews at the University of Georgia. You can tell why he's a Red Star guy. I mean, he's smart. He has a confidence to him without being cocky. Kyle Hamilton said the other day that he thinks Starks is kind of miles ahead of where Hamilton was as a rookie at this point in time. And Starks was asked about that. He said, "Look, I think Kyle's being generous." And then he went on to say, "Look, I think I know football at a pretty high level, but then I talked to Kyle Hamilton and I talked to Marlon Humphrey and I talked to Jaire Alexander
Or I talked to
and
Chuck Pagano.
or Chuck Pagano," and he's talked a lot about Pagano as well. "And then I realized how much I have to learn." And I just think that recognition from someone who's 21 or 22 years old, that they know that they don't know everything, but they're being a sponge and they're soaking up everything they can from their teammates and their coaches. And his reputation coming out of Georgia was he was a really smart player. They could line him up anywhere. He played slot, he played safety, he could play in the
Well, at
box.
Georgia, you're getting instruction too. It's a
And
little
that's the other
different,
thing
yeah.
too. I mean, you're talking about a national championship program, especially over the last 10 years, what Georgia has been. So with Kirby Smart and everything. But I mean, I think they're really excited about him. And that doesn't mean he's going to make the Pro Bowl as a rookie. Let me be clear about that. But I think there's an optimism that that spot is not going to be a problem, that that spot's going to be solid, even with having lost Ardarius Washington, even with the thought that I still think they need to bring in a veteran safety, because I think you want to be able to run some three safety sets. And I don't know who that number three guy is right now. I'm not sure it's Sanusi Kane or Bo Braid or anyone like that that's on the roster. You're talking about unproven young guys there. But I think Starks is in a good place right now. Look, is that not to say that he won't have a hiccup at some point in the Buffalo game or the Kansas City game? Kyle Hamilton had hiccups his first 6 weeks in the NFL, right? I mean, we remember Miami throwing the ball over his head in that week two shootout. So that's not to say that Starks won't have some hiccups early on, but I think they're really excited about him. So
Well, the
all
better
these,
he is, the better it'll make Hamilton for
no
what they
doubt.
want to do with Hamilton,
No
because
doubt.
it's pretty clear they don't want Hamilton playing a base safety role. They didn't feel like they thrived in that, that they did everything they could do, including losing football games,
Yeah.
trying to put him up on the line of scrimmage with Marcus Williams in the back. starting the season this year with knowing that you want to get him to that role and figure out how you get 10 other, well, four other players in the back end, or maybe five if you go nickel dime,
Yeah.
and say, all right, where then does that put Kyle Hamilton into whatever that role is? Eagle, there's been all sorts of names
Joker,
for it.
yeah. I
Yeah,
mean, all
yeah.
kind, yeah.
Whatever that loose role of play, the Rex Ryan 46.
Positionless.
You're the 11. You're
Yeah.
46 plus one. That's you.
Yeah. I mean it, and look, we all talked about this late last year. Kyle Hamilton did an excellent job with what they asked him to do, right? I mean, he and Ardarius Washington settled them down. They were a really, really good defense over the last 7 or 8 weeks after they made those changes, but it didn't allow you to optimize your usage for Kyle Hamilton. It didn't allow him to be the same kind of game wrecker on a down by down basis. So that's not to say he won't play deep safety at all. I mean, I think you're still going to see him, and he did that before, right? It's not as though he was at the line of scrimmage every single play. You just want to have the freedom and the flexibility to deploy him in that way whenever you want. So that's where I said I still think they're going to need to add another safety. And maybe the answer is that they move one of the corners to safety on certain plays. I mean, quietly, Marlon Humphrey will sometimes line up at safety, on a couple plays a game. I don't know if maybe you lean into something like that a little bit more. I mean, I know they've cross-trained Jalen Armour Davis as a safety a little bit more this spring. So, so that's a little bit to be determined. But to go back to your original point, when you were asking me about the coaching and trying to kind of flesh out what you like or augment what you like, flesh out what you don't like quite as much. So much of that does come down to these young guys. And for as much as we have these big name players when we're talking about this Ravens defense and this Ravens secondary, I think you look at Wiggins and Starks where you say, man, if those guys, if Wiggins takes a big step in year two, and if Starks is a legitimate, very worthy first round safety and can, especially you get to October and November and he just feels like, he's humming along and he knows what he's doing and starting to make more plays. Man, you're talking about a secondary that, I mean, where's the weakness, right? I mean, last year the weakness was find Marcus Williams, find Brandon Stevens, so early on this year, I'm guessing Josh Allen in Buffalo, Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, they're going to be looking at Starks, right? They're going to be looking at Nate Wiggins, so they're going to be looking at those guys. Not to say that they're bad players, but they're the least proven of those guys on the back end of the defense. So, that's what you're looking at defensively. You mentioned the offense. So give me a 30 seconds to touch on the offense as well. Todd Monk in year three, I think they're still trying to work on pre-snap cadence. We know they had issues with pre-snap penalties last year. They're trying to vary, have a little more variance in their cadence. And yeah, a byproduct of that when you're working on that is you're going to have a few more false start penalties, especially in a training camp setting. So I'm not necessarily fazed by that as much. But you mentioned DeAndre Hopkins. And I do think something that you could see come to fruition more so for this offense than maybe we saw the last couple of years is you now have DeAndre Hopkins who, even at this stage of his career, and obviously he's not a number one 1300 yard kind of receiver anymore, and they're not paying him to be that. So I think it's important to understand what the expectations are for him. But I think he's someone who can still make contested catches. He's someone who can still win on the outside more so than other receivers they've had here in recent years. And you have Rashad Bateman who has emerged. So now I think you're in a position, not that they're going to be in three wide receiver sets all the time, because they still have Mark Andrews and Isaiah likely. So you'll still see them run plenty of two tight end sets. But I think when they are in 11 personnel, and when I mean 11 personnel, one tight end, one running back, three wide receivers, I think you're now in a spot where you can put Hopkins on the outside on one side of the field, Bateman on the outside on the other side of the field. And I think you can probably play Zay Flowers in the slot a little bit more. And I think that's an intriguing
It's a
option.
mismatch, right?
Yeah, I think that's an intriguing option that not that he's never played in the slot, but I think you can do that a little bit more. And you might be able to identify, like you said, a few more mismatches or a few more vulnerabilities in coverage where that might take Zay Flowers to the next level. And maybe we're talking about him not as a 1,000 yard receiver, but maybe And I don't want to go too high here because you still have Derrick Henry in this amazing running game, but maybe Zay Flowers is more of an 1150, 1200 yard receiver this year. I mean, and again, that's one example, but that's also what you have when you have the benefit of now being in year three of the Todd Monken, Lamar Jackson partnership. And, we talked about this a lot the last couple of years. If there's something that's been different about Lamar Jackson under Todd Monken compared to Greg Roman, beyond just talking about, okay, the passing numbers, the passing game in general. But I think a big part of it, and Monken talked about this from the moment he arrived, was giving Lamar ownership of the offense, and more specifically, more ownership of the offense pre-snap, coming to the line of scrimmage and assessing. Is he audible? Is he doing the amount of audible type stuff that Tom Brady did or Peyton Manning did in his prime when those guys were 33? Probably not, but he's doing a heck of a lot more of it than he did under Greg Roman, let's say. And I think that's been something that has really helped take this offense to another level. So now it's year three of
Getting you
that.
out of a bad play
Yeah,
is
exactly. You know, whether it's
paramount. I mean, five, six times a game, if that happens and you get out of a bad play, that's how you keep the ball,
I mean, that's
right?
the difference between second and 11 and maybe a touchdown or a 40-yard gain, right? I mean, it really goes a long way. A lot of what this offense, and let's face it, I mean, this offense was incredible last year. I mean, they had over 3,000 rushing yards and over 4,000 passing yards. You're doing a lot well when you have those kind of numbers. So really, it's not necessarily you're going to find ways to be dramatically better, because I don't think you can be dramatically better. I mean, Derrick Henry's not going to run for 3,000 yards this year. He almost ran for 2,000 this past year. I think you mentioned an interesting point. I mean, Derrick Henry's 31. Do you want him carrying the ball 25 times a game in September? I mean, it depends on the game situation, of course, but yeah, everything they do is about trying to optimize this thing for December and January, and you hope early February. But I just think with Monken in year three, now you've installed so much, you've established an identity. You returned all but one starter, right? I mean, Patrick McCary's the only starter gone from the end of last year on the offensive side of the ball. So
And he
you
was a guy
should.
that didn't want to be a starter.
I mean, like, they'll miss him from a versatility and depth standpoint, but he's not Marshall Yanda. He wasn't Marshall Yanda or Ben Grubbs at guard. But, so you're really in a position of you have such a base to work off of, you have such a foundation to work from that it's just, how can we augment? How can we enhance? How can we tweak? We have DeAndre Hopkins now. Great. We have Isaiah Likely in year four. Great. How can we incorporate those guys a little more into the offense? Rashad Bateman last year, we finally saw Lamar Jackson and Bateman have this chemistry that they started hitting those vertical plays. How can we do even more of that? Because if we do that, my goodness, teams aren't going to be able to play eight in the box then if you have Bateman going deep and making big plays. And then so they have to move someone out of the box.
Well, that's
And then
part of the
you,
mismatch that you have
sure, with
Henry
Derrick Henry
and Lamar. No
and Lamar.
one in the
Yeah.
history of the game
Of course.
has
So
had that.
you have all that already. So now it's just, how can we squeeze a little more out of that? How can we squeeze a little more out of Bateman in the vertical? I mentioned Zay Flowers. Maybe he can play in the slot a little more because you have Hopkins on the outside too now. So it's just, none of this, I mean, there isn't a whole lot to fix with their offense. I mean, okay, in an ideal world, yeah, they'd have a better offensive line. I get that. I'm not going to say they have the best offensive line in the NFL.
If they eliminated the penalties last year,
Yeah.
they would have been
And,
better.
right. I mean, their offensive line, I mean, that was the worst thing you could say about their O-line last year is the penalties. The performance overall was pretty darn good most of the time. So how can you get a little bit better? And that sounds like a coach speak thing, right? But we've talked about this. I mean, this team on paper in the regular season has been as great as it can be, right? When it's healthy, they've been that great. It's all about one, you have to navigate that and you have to be good enough to make it to the playoffs. But once you do that, it's all about what can we do in January? What can we do to better position ourselves for January? How can we make our offense a little more dynamic? How can we force a few more turnovers on defense? How can we just eliminate mistakes, right? I mean, we've talked about it with Lamar or Mark Andrews with the not just the drop, but the fumble in Buffalo. Zay Flowers 2 years ago against Kansas City, reaching over the goal line. Some of it is just slow the heartbeat. Maybe be a little more boring in some of those spots. You know, Lamar, he had the fumble in Buffalo. It was a bad snap from Linderbaum. He dropped it and then picked it up and then fumbled it again. Maybe it was just, hey, Lamar, in that spot, we love you, man, but it's January. Just take a 2 yard loss there. We'll live the fight again. It's okay. Instead of trying to do too much in that spot, and then it turned into a disaster. So, and I'm not picking on Lamar. Like, they've had that with guys on both sides of the ball making critical mistakes in those spots. So I don't know if you can really practice that in July and August, right? Because you can't replicate the heartbeat and the nerves and just the urgency of the situation, but those are the things you have to try to preach. So, but you know, to bring it back, and you know, it's a long rambling answer to your question about the coordinators and what you're doing this time of year, but they have such a great foundation to build off of here that it really is just trying to get a little bit better with pre-snap cadence, or getting a little bit better with communication on the back end of the secondary. You know, being able to deploy Kyle Hamilton in a more of a wild card role like they were able to do before last year's problems set in. So, you know, I have very high expectations for this team. I think they're going to be better coached this year than they were last year. Again, that defensive side of the ball had some problems with some of the position coaches, as you see, guys that were one and done. You know, their linebackers coach, you know, a guy in the secondary. I mean, so they made some changes there. So, you know, it sounds so cliche because you'll hear this 100 times from players over the next 5 weeks. The sky's the limit, right? The sky's the limit. The sky's the limit. It really is for this team, but it only matters come January, right? And they have a long way to go in between now and then, and they've got a lot of work they have to put in.
Luke Jones is putting in a lot of work in the heat out in Owings Mills this week as the Ravens put on the helmets, put on the pads, stretch it out a little bit. Lots of fans out there yelling, safe management, yelling at Luke sometimes. Me, not getting yelled at all. I hated this part of the season, which is one of the reasons Chad Steele threw me out. But nonetheless, all of you running out there is a rumor that Leonard Raskin is inviting me out as part of the important people this weekend, so I may be making my real. I'm probably banned there. It's probably like Trump getting into Scotland or something like that. I'm not sure, but I will try to go to Owings Mills this week if I am so invited. But Luke was invited every day on behalf of WNST and his media pass. I am just one of those guys that can't ask John Harbaugh what the hell he was doing with Donald Trump 2 weeks ago at the White House. It is a football week around here. It is a baseball trading deadline week. It is not a crab cake week, although they're all crab cake weeks. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour next Thursday, kicking off our 27th year in Baltimore radio. Our anniversary is August the 3rd. We're proud of that. We're going to do 27 of my favorite things to eat in 27 days because people ask me all the time, who's got the best crab cake? And I almost wanted to tell them, crab cakes aside, go out to Costas and get the Crab Imperial because it's delicious. I did that on Friday night. I also spent a little bit of time down in Delaware this weekend with Tommy Conwell and the Young Rumblers. But I will be at the Beaumont on the 7th of August. We have dates throughout the month of August. I'll have lots of winners to give away. These Pressure Lux are the $3 tickets. They have bigger winners, so I like that. Also, this week, we're going to get to the heart of rock and roll a little bit too. I got some great rock and roll guests coming up later on in the week. Trading deadline. If you're on the WNST text service, brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy, you'll get it first when Cedric Mullins disappears or Ryan O'Hearn, maybe by the time you hear this. But it is football season here. We're excited about that. Happy summer to everyone. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore positive.